recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win, like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hello. Welcome along to this week's Let's Get Running podcast. I'm here with my fellow co-host, Tom Craggs. How are you doing, Tom?
I'm very good, thanks, Sean. How are you doing?
I'm very good. I'm conscious that was a bit shouty, that start, so I'll ease back on the shouting now and carry on from that point. I don't want to hurt the listeners' ears from this point forward. But you doing all right? How's life in the Emerald? I was going to say the Emerald Isle, that's Ireland. But how's life down in the southwest?
It's beautiful, right? It's very windy. So the seafront in Bournemouth is just kind of covered in sand and like a gale blowing through the whole time. But it's beautiful. What little time I seem to have spent here recently, I've been out and about all over the place at work. But it's the southwest. People are still drinking cider, you know, eating pasties and green tea to fall into all the stereotypes.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, well, I'm getting absolutely fed up of this wind. Like, it's been a month now of trying to trudge into this wind. And I'm sure, I don't know if this is right, but I'm sure the Netherlands is just windier. I guess because we're close to the sea, and, well, I suppose Bournemouth can't get close to the sea, but there's no protection, I guess, from the North Sea, and it just seems so windy all the time. And it's the first year.
You've got no hills to block it, that's the problem.
No hills, nothing. They've got no natural defence from the wind. So I think this is the first year me and the wife have been thinking, do you know what? Should we go and live somewhere else in the winter months? Because this is just a pain. And running is such a... I don't know if I'm fit or not, because every time I go out and try and run, my times are well down. I'm struggling along because it's hard work to run into a headwind. So I don't know if I'm coming or going, really, with the running. But, hey, we'll see. And also,
if you do progression runs, every run ends up being good then. So, you know, everything, every single run, even if it's an easy recovery run, it's a progression run, and you'll finish every run feeling good.
Yeah, with the wind behind me, I'll be absolutely perfect. Yeah, I can tick that off. Yeah, I should do that. I've got a really tough session in a minute. I'm going out and doing some mile reps, trying to run at 3-minute K pace, which I haven't run for a long time, I've got to be honest. So I'm going to see how that one goes. And then I've got to go and we're launching... park run Vesta Park. So I live here in the west of the city, and we're starting, my local park is Vesta Park, and we're going to be launching park run Vesta Park in a couple of weeks time. So I'm going to test out some routes today with Derry, who is he works for park run I think park run you I'm not exactly sure, but he looks at which events take place in Europe and stuff. So that's quite exciting, but I'm going to be absolutely knackered having run a few miles at 3-minute K pace and then trying to run around with Derry to test out these courses. So yeah, wish me luck this afternoon, Tom, I reckon.
I will. Well, good luck.
Thanks, man. So this is our final show of the marathon series. So obviously we're going to come on to that. But there's been so much going on in the world of athletics that it's worth speaking about a couple of other things. One of which is good news. And we're going to chat about the greatest spectacle on earth, that's being the English National Cross Country, which took place in Nottingham on Saturday. Did you go and watch that, Tom?
I did not. No, I was tied up doing some work down south, unfortunately, so I couldn't make it this time. I have done every year the last few years, so shame to miss it, especially on such a lovely, muddy year.
Yeah, wow. If overseas listeners, it's obviously the Neat English Championships, and it was run in Nottingham this year, and it's absolute mud bath. You can see online, if you go on Twitter and look at things like AW, look on their website, they've got, I think, also on their Twitter, they've got some videos there. And Mark Hookway, if you go on his YouTube account, you can watch videos of all the races there. It was mad, so muddy. And we had winners. I haven't got all the results here because we're obviously doing a marathon show, but winners Anna Moller, who I was rude about previously on a previous show. I wasn't rude about her, but I made a joke about her being from Denmark and coming over here, taking our titles. She's gone and got another one. She's Danish. She runs for Aldershot. She won the national cross country on a muddy course. And for the men, a first winner from Gateshead for many years, I think. It was Callum Johnson. He took the title. But the interesting story on that one was Adam Hickey. So fans of British athletics will know Adam Hickey. He's been national champion last year. He lost his shoe on the first lap. So he ran a lap and a half in basically a mud bath. And then he managed to find his shoe halfway around. Some of his teammates were running around the course, threw the shoe to him. He went and sat down on a park bench, put his shoe back on. There's an actual video of this happening on his Twitter feed, if you go and have a look at
that.
It's
a cracking video. It's like school by own stuff, isn't it?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I mean, he's a great... I think if you were into sort of British distance running, Adam's one of those people you can't help but like, you know? Gets kind of... And you mentioned him last time when we were talking about the marathon and, you know, been maybe one to watch in the future. But just from his cross-country running, you know, his proper kind of gutsy running. But it's a great video. If you look on the Fast Running Twitter site, you'll see that we've retweeted it from Adam. And it's a great watch because you see how many people go past. Like, the speed these guys are running.
Yeah.
He loses loads of places there.
Yeah,
absolutely loads of places. And come back in the way he did was fantastic.
Amazing. So he picked up fourth place, so just shy of the medals, but in those circumstances, pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. Have you ever lost a shoe in a race, Tom?
Yeah, I actually have. The Southend at Parliament Hill, as I'm sure many people have. But let's be honest, you know, me losing a spike in a national or Southern Cross Country Championships probably makes a very little difference to my overall performance. I have lost it, but refound. I've never lost permanently. No.
I've done something quite well. I didn't mean to, but however, I was on the other end of a shoe loss. So it was back in the days when I could actually run a bit, and I was running for England in Cardiff, and it was quite a big showdown for some big prize money between Andy Vernon and Frank Tickner. So Frank just needed to, I think he just needed to win, and he tied up this the kind of prize money for the year across this series. And on the first corner, my teammate Andy Vernon was running for Saucony, so he wasn't in the England vest. I trod on Frank's heel and I took his bike clean off, and it was so bad. I really didn't mean to. I felt so bad for him because Andy just absolutely pegged it off at the front, and I think he was second. He won and Frank came back for second. I think I was third in the end with John Gilbert in just behind. And it was, I felt really bad. Not only did I lose the guy an opportunity to win some big money, but I scraped down and bloodied up his ankle. So Frank, if you're listening, I apologise for that. I've apologised about 1,000 times, but I apologise again. Anyway, let's move on.
Another great cross country runner, Frank. But that's team running, mate. You've got people don't realise that about you. I think they think you're this nice guy, this nice West Country guy. Truth is, you're evil, mate. If you have to do it for the team, you do it for the team.
I'm all out, clearly all out Andy, for the individual, mate.
I don't know what Andy paid you to do that, but I hope it was good.
Yeah, it was worth it. It was worth it. Speaking of bad news, last night was the 24th, so we're talking on Tuesday. Last night was the Panorama documentary about the Salazar issue. So if you haven't seen it, I'm guessing as running fans, most people will have seen it. But pretty sort of pretty damning evidence there from revealed by Mark Daly. Did you manage to catch it, Tom?
Yeah, I did. I did catch it last night. Yeah. And, you know, I think there's obviously some stuff that we already knew. And I think, you know, British Athletics have kind of put out a statement about, you know, their involvement in that. But I think it's, you know, whatever way you fall in, it was a difficult watch for those of us kind of into British distance running and have been kind of for a long period of time. I think it was a pretty difficult watch.
Yeah, it was. I think the bit that really stuck out with me was like, in a way, we can brush past the Mo thing and it looks very, there's very something fishy going on there, really. But the bit with Cara Goucher was like, and we talked about, she talked about like how everything she's done now as an athlete, all these years she spent, everything she's done in her career now is completely tainted. And it's like, she came out, she was the whistleblower, she came out there and did it. But she was like, why would I have done that? It's you know, unless I was, there was absolutely... definitely stuff going on, why would I have tainted my whole legacy? And imagine being that good a runner as Cara was, and then having to, now everyone looks back at her career and judges sort of what she's done as, is it maybe clean or is it, you know, is it tainted? It's sad for her, man, really sad for her.
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, the bigger issue for me is and it's sort of, I won't sort of comment on the actual situation with with Mo. But the bigger issue for me is around, and we mentioned it before, around kind of coach-athlete relationships and kind of the levels of control that a coach can have and should have over an athlete, and how, you know, when that starts to become something that can actually become quite damaging and unhealthy. And I think, you know, whatever you think about the actual sort of allegations themselves, I think that there are, for all of us, like, learning points for those of us who work with athletes, actually about how you manage relationships with athletes and how damaging that can become, and actually how athletes, you know, how much control a coach can exert over an athlete. And that isn't, you know, doesn't always result, and in fact doesn't often result, in healthy relationships and healthy bodies over a long period of time.
Yeah, well, there'll be a lot more coming out, I guess, over the next few months, or it will just completely die down. But we'll wait and see with bated breath what happens with that. Anyway, other news: it was the British Indoor Championships. Obviously, we are a long distance podcast, so the only race of any notice, any interest really for us at the moment, is the 3K, and we had a comeback victory for Johnny Davis. Really nice guy. I spoke to him, I think, on one of my first ever episodes. Really good, talented runner. Good to see him back winning a title. Philip Seidsman there was second, a good friend of the show, Phil. And in the women's race, Dorset won too. Well, I'm not
sure. Oh, yes, it was indeed. Well, I mean, I don't know when the last time either athlete visited Dorset was. I'm sure it has been relatively recently. But, yeah, I mean, some great running there from Melissa Corn.
Yeah, and Verity. Yeah. Well, Verity's been a former interview on the show. I highly recommend checking that one out. She's obviously a chef, she's a poet, and she's obviously a very good indoor 3,000 metre runner. So, yeah, go back and have a look. So we should move on to marathoning. And we've got, there's been really good marathon news this week or in the last couple of weeks. Again, but we'll start with the bad news this time. Tokyo Marathon is off for the coronavirus. That's all gone pear-shaped for them. And also, I'd imagine a couple of races in Italy are stuff under threat. The Milan Marathon's next month or month after, I think. I know Lombardy's been the place where there's been a few cases that have hit. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what other big international marathons take the same step as Tokyo and decide to call it off. But the good news is Seville Marathon. What a day for British runners, or British connected runners, let's say.
Wow, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, first and foremost, you know, Johnny Meller, Steve Vernon is doing great things with his group. I think, you know, for those people interested in kind of coaching and coaching setups, those guys in Steve's group, you know, are consistent performers. I think the kind of really interesting thing about when you look at Johnny's progression is the consistency of it. He's also not wearing Nike shoes. we'll kind of caveat that. So I made it on a chip time, 2:10:04. So well within Olympic qualifying standard, and a couple of minutes off plus from his time in Berlin, and he's kind of made that just good, consistent, solid progress over the last couple of years, and that was a fantastic run. And of course Kevin Seward as well, coached by Andy Hobdell, who Andy seems to be the man to go to for marathons at the moment. If you're an elite athlete, he is, you know, he does seem to have this fantastic track record of working with top class marathon runners. You know, a great negative split just a few seconds behind Johnny, and those guys, and actually a Northern Irish marathon record, which has now fallen three times in the last 5 months, to Steve Scully and Paul Pollock and now Kev. So things are ultra competitive in Northern Ireland at the moment.
That's amazing to have three guys running 2:10 for Ireland. That's really, really good. I mean, there's a much smaller talent pool to choose from. I think we haven't got two guys. We've got Callum and now, I guess, Johnny, but we're still behind that, aren't we, in terms of volume?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Dowie Griffiths but he's just returning. So, yeah, I mean, he's obviously had a difficult year with injuries and stuff the last year, but I saw he ran the Welsh cross-country championships at the weekend, finished fourth, so he's obviously just kind of easing into his return, but hopefully things kind of progress rapidly for him, because he's another one who's kind of up there.
Yeah. And we should say shout out to Malcolm Hicks, London-based Kiwi, and also formerly, you probably lived in The Hague. I met him last year. One of the loveliest blokes you'll ever meet, Malcolm. Really nice to see him running well. He ran 2:10, I think 2:10.09. I think him, Johnny and Kev C were within 6 seconds of each other, all hailing from a...
I think they had quite a nice group there, I think, by the looks of the splits. But...
Yeah. And speaking of Nike and Seville, obviously Johnny not wearing them, did you see the guy who won it? I think it was in Seville. Wearing the he was wearing an Adidas singlet, all Adidas gear, but he had the Nike 4% on. So obviously he was an Adidas sponsored athlete who decided he'd switch over and try a different shoe, which is quite an interesting little.
I imagine that's going to go well in his next conversation with Adidas.
yeah. Be enjoyable to see that one, but hey, let's see. But anyway, we should move on to our marathon show. We've been asking you guys for questions. And we've got a couple that we're going to answer. And then we're going to kind of summarise some little bits from the things we've talked about, both to Elsie and to Mike Grattan. We spoke a couple of weeks ago. So we're going to ask these questions now, Tom. We're going to try and answer them for our listeners. But the first one is from Hannah Turner, who emailed in. And she says, I have two rescue dogs, so walk 3 to 5 miles a day with them. How do you think this would affect or complement my marathon training? Have you got dogs? I've never had a dog. No,
I grew up with dogs. My parents have always had dogs, so well used to walking. But I have to say, not since I started to run. I mean, they'll definitely help you if you strap them onto your front around a belt and run your marathon with them. We do the parkrun times each week. The canny cross times, people running absolutely astounding times. Very dog supported. I don't know. I mean, it depends on. I guess that one depends on your level of fitness, doesn't it? So.
Well, she goes further to say that she said she's running 3 or 4 times a week, but she's equaling PB times that she ran when running 5 days a week. So she just says her main question is, can a good walk replace one easy run a week?
It depends on your level of fitness to a point, because like if you're an athlete who is looking at some quicker times, the discrepancy between your potential marathon pace and the intensity your body works when you go out for a walk is, you know, obviously it's going to be a very low level session. But actually, if what you're doing is replacing like a recovery run, some active kind of aerobic recovery where you want to get your legs moving to kind of allow your muscles to feel a little better, clearly it's still aerobic exercise, and it kind of goes without saying. And in fact, over the years, there've been, you know, definitely some good athletes who have kind of started off as kind of like long distance walkers and moved into running and performed very well. Clearly that's commonly the case with ultra runners. Like Damien Hall has run very well over long, long distances, UTMB and the like. And I believe he kind of did a lot of longer distance walking before he got into running. So I do think I definitely think it can help. I think what's more relevant is look at the evidence that's happening for you as an individual person. And it might be, rather than replacing the run with a walk, it might just be that for you, you've dropped a little bit of running out of your week for whatever reason. The volume of running and training you were doing was too high. Maybe your recovery is being a bit stressed because of work, or, you know, broader life things, nutrition. Maybe you might be running your runs a little bit too hard, whatever it is. And if it's working for you, I know it's kind of sounds a sit on the fence thing to say, but if it's working for you, that's all the information you need. Like whether or not the walk itself is the thing that's benefited you, or the fact that you're doing one less run, who's to say? One thing's for sure, walking is good for you. Walking is definitely good for you, and it is kind of good base level aerobic fitness. So yeah, why not? Give it a try. If it works, keep doing it.
Yeah, I think I remember getting a mountain runner training plan from Marco, or someone sent me something from Marco. Is it Marco Gaspari? I'm not sure. Really famous Italian mountain runner. I'll dig it out and try and remember it. But he used to do a session a week, which would be a long hike once a week. So he would always get out there and do it. So yeah, it seems to work for some people. And if it's working for you, Hannah, keep it going. Keep it going.
And back in the day, like, you know, decades and decades and decades ago, before we moved into like modern training systems and everything else, walking definitely features on the training plans of some of the kind of early pioneers of even middle distance running. So yeah, I think if it's working, you keep doing it. It's your heart and lungs. If you feel like you're getting a bit of a workout, your heart and lungs won't really know too much of a difference between walking and going for a run. Your muscles might do, but You know, ultimately, if you're trying to develop cardiovascular fitness, it still contributes to that.
Yeah, excellent. And the next question is Kevin McQuaid. I hope I pronounced that your surname right there, Kevin. He said, I'm training for Boston and wanted some suggestions for building that resilience around the last 10K. Any suggestions of how to build this into a longer weekend run would be much appreciated on the pod. I've tried the split of running 60% easy-ish and the last 40% of the distance at marathon pace for up to 32K in previous training cycles. So he's running about sort of 20 miles roughly. 60% of that is easy, 40% at marathon pace. Any other things you could suggest, Tom, that might help him out in for building up that strength on tired legs?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends what Boston he's talking about. If he's talking about Boston in the States, Boston in the UK, the marathon is pretty flat. Boston in the States has a particular course profile that I think is worth training for. And I think a lot of times see athletes getting very fit in the build up to Boston, you know, the marathon major Boston in the States. They get very fit running flat routes in the UK, but they don't prepare specifically for the particular profile of that course, which basically broadly downhill in the first half and then broadly uphill in the second half. Plenty of flat in between, of course. What it means is that a lot of people sort of pace off a positive split, so you kind of go through the first half a little bit quicker. But if you run the downhills too quick in the early part of the race and you get to the hills in the second half, look, they're not mountains, but you know, if you've put your quads to a load of eccentric load running quick downhill in the first 10K, those hills are going to feel pretty horrible in the second half. So I'd do some runs that mimic the profile of the course a little bit. I'll be doing definitely a little bit of hill work. So I might be doing some continuous hills. Some people call them Kenyan hills, or at least kind of, or maybe even some fartlek running over a hilly route. And tempo running or threshold running over a hilly route where you kind of get your body used to working at a bit of a controlled discomfort, but you're used to running both up and down. So the downhill kind of gives you a good eccentric kind of strengthening in your quads, and uphill you're getting the kind of glute, hamstrings, calf muscles. So building running specific strength. There's loads of other stuff you can do. You can obviously do stuff in a gym. I'm really kind of big advocate of doing drills and focusing on kind of good posture, being able to hold your posture well at the back end of the race, you know, before you even start to touch on stuff like fueling, which is kind of really critical to making sure. Sometimes people feel like they don't have the strength for a marathon, when sometimes it's actually just because they've run out of energy, you know, and they paced it wrong. But definitely dropping in marathon pace at the back end of long runs, whether you do it as a set block like that, whether you do it structured, you know, 3x20 minutes, 4x20 minutes at marathon pace, whether you do the sort of, you know, blocks of 2 or 3K at marathon pace with a K or so steady in between. There's lots of things you can do, but getting used to doing that on tired legs without kind of overdoing the whole run by running too much of it at marathon pace and leaving yourself knackered is a sensible way to go.
I remember I was doing a session when I was doing sort of my Canova style training. I don't know if it's a Canova session, but it was set by Nate Jenkins, who's over in the US. And I think I'll have to dig out again, but I think I ran sort of 25K at moderate effort. So for me, I was aiming for 320Ks. I think I ran it about 350Ks for 25K. I then did some, a bit of an alternations. So 1K at marathon pace, 1K float, which again was at 350. So I got to 35K. And at the end, and this is something as well that sports psychologist Andy Lane recommended, is I did 6 or 7 400s and just tried to run them like almost at 10K effort. So I'm picking the pace up again, but the principle was I had to kind of battle with my mind because my legs are bloody knackered at that stage. And it was the battle in your head that he was kind of training, and was like, right, I've had a minute break, I've got another 400, let's focus on just keeping it smooth, just trying to run hard. And then again, you stop, you have your 1 minute or so break in between each one. And again, that sort of thing, you'd have to do 400, perhaps sort of doing some 250s, 300s, just 5 or 6, and thinking about your mental preparation as well as the physical one, sort of getting yourself up for this kind of stride or sprint at the end of, you know, 35K of decent pace running, which I thought was quite a good...
I think that's great advice. Dr. Andy Kirkland at University of Stirling, who I've done a bit I've worked with, is sort of a big advocate of taking like a psychobiological approach to training. So not just focusing on biophysics, so like what your heart rate is, what energy systems you're using, but also recognizing that your brain plays a role in those things. So, you know, your perception of effort is as critical as what your heart rate says or what your lactate levels are or anything like that. And actually, we don't often do stuff to train that. So, you do see athletes who are able to hold a level of discomfort for longer than other athletes, and sometimes that's the thing that makes difference between kind of success and failure. The person who gets to 33k, and guess what, 33k, 35k, 36k of a marathon hurts, of course it does, but the person who kind of goes, well, that hurt, that's normal, like that's good, that should be happening because this is a marathon and I'm pushing hard, compared to the person who goes, no, it's hurting, so that must be wrong, something's gone wrong, I must slow down, you know. I think, but we don't often do stuff to train it, so I think that's a great idea, but obviously you're not doing so much of it that is going to kind of damage you and really smack your recovery too hard. So keeping it short like that, you know, 5-6 kind of short efforts is great, because kind of mimics, kind of tricks your brain to thinking you've done something that's incredibly difficult, when actually the load itself hasn't really been that much extra than you would have done in a normal long run.
Yeah, excellent, rather not excellent, what the hell does that mean? And our final question from the emails was from Steve Maron. Steve's a good friend of the show. He's always emailing in. It's good to hear his feedback. His is quite a general question, really, but he just wanted kind of, obviously for the guys that aren't at the very top, who are non-sponsored, he was wondering how much kit these guys go through a year. So guys that run into around 230, and it must be, he said it must be like, if it was one of the, as they're putting in, there's so much time and the cost of that, and then they must spend a fortune on trainers. It's quite an interesting point, isn't it? These guys, you only ever see the guys at the very top, and you know, these guys that are sponsored, putting on these Nike shoes and stuff. It's quite an expensive pastime. It's nothing like cycling, but you go through a lot of shoes. I'd say I have about 5 or 6 pairs of shoes on rotation, and sometimes you're lucky enough to grab a pair of shoes for free off somebody, or do you know what I mean? You got a mate in a running shop, and they'll give you a little freebie every now and again. But it does add up, and for these guys that you're running, you know, 230, they're never going to trouble the England team, but it's a labour of love, right? Is that the right phrase? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Because you think, if you're putting through, you know, like a lot of these guys are, and, you know, I've got athletes who have raced for England and GB who aren't sponsored, and they're running over 100 miles a week. So you're kind of on paper, you're going through a pair of shoes a month or so, you know, a month and a bit. And the reality is, of course, that you're mixing different pairs, and you're kind of, you know, probably a lot of people end up doing more miles than on paper you're supposed to do in them and everything else. But it definitely can add up. Of course it can, because if you're spending 100, 120 quid-ish on a pair of shoes every month, that's a lot of money. Plus, if you start to put in things like, you know, sports massage, physio, all that sort of stuff, it's not quite as cheap a sport as people realise. But I do think a lot of athletes probably keep running in their shoes, like, you know, they run in them until they're absolutely on their last legs. So it's the reality of
yeah. That was an interesting point, the thing about this sort of the massage and physio. So my coach Martin said he wanted me to kind of get a regular monthly massage. And I remember Jermaine, obviously former co-host on here, saying he'd make a deal with the local massage parlour, say I'd come in here, you know, twice a month if you give me a special rate and all that sort of thing. But the more you go on, the older I get, the more I really, you know, it's confirmed to me that you should seek specialist attention as much as possible. And I think that's a point that Elsie kind of made in her interview last week, that as soon as she gets a niggle, she's down the physio to get their assessment on what's going wrong. And I think guys around this 230, 240 kind of spectrum, one of the problems is they don't do that enough. And it is expensive to buy these shoes, but if they could find that extra bit to go and, you know, get some specialist attention when they hurt themselves and that sort of thing, and get them back running more quickly than they ordinarily would, that would definitely benefit the training. But money doesn't grow on trees.
And they're also doing, like, some of these guys are, you know, if you're obviously Elsie is working, she's a doctor and everything else, so she's, you know, she's an elite athlete mixing it with work. But a lot of the guys, you know, women and guys, say running, you know, guys running 225, 230, 240, and the women running 245, 50, 3 hours, they're training mileage wise, intensity wise, pretty much not far off what a full-time athlete would do. A lot of them, you know, maybe 20% less, but they're working full-time, or, you know, and yet they're not, as you rightly say, not sometimes not as good at the elite athletes as doing the other stuff around it, the boring stuff or the costly stuff that keeps your body ticking over. They're good at the outputs, but maybe not always quite as good at the inputs. As it, I mean, that's kind of very general sweeping statement, but I think it's evidenced, you know.
Oh, I almost forgot. When I spoke to Tommy Hughes, the 59-year-old, we're 60 now, but the record breaker, 2:27 at 59 in the Frankfurt Marathon last year. When I spoke to him recently, and one of our previous podcasts, I had a little tidbit at the end, which we haven't included. This is exclusive new material. We asked Tommy what his tips for running marathons are. Here is a little tidbit from Tommy. Here we go.
Can you provide us, this is again a really tough question to narrow it down, but sort of one key marathon training tip, specifically maybe for the older runner, is there anything you would say that listeners should try and do to perform at their best?
I think let's say 4 weeks to go for a marathon, to go out and do the 26 mile at a slower pace will help a great deal in a marathon.
Right.
And I think people has to get that run done. Just, I do about two 26 miles build up for the marathon in my 12-week period of building up for the marathon.
Mm.
And it definitely helps, because you're running that distance. You've got it in your legs. Like some people, like, a good example is Stephen Scullion, who ran Doha in 2:21.
Mm-hmm.
And then, was it 3 or 4 weeks later, he ran that 2:12 in Dublin.
Yeah.
He'd got that marathon distance in his legs at a slower pace, and he was coming there knowing that he could do the distance and just getting the pace and just getting everything else right, you know, everything else to fall into place.
Yeah, absolutely.
And definitely for people doing the marathon, just get the marathon done at a slower pace, about 4 or even 6 weeks before a marathon, just to get that under the belt, you know, give them a lot of confidence as well as giving the leg work as well.
Yeah, excellent. And do you have, I was going to ask if you had a favourite marathon session, I guess that's it then. Or do you have, is there one specifically that you really love doing in a build up for a marathon?
Yeah, well, as I say, I do about 17 mile on a Sunday, I enjoy just going out on a Sunday morning, all nobody out of bed,
yeah,
all peaceful, and getting that run, just enjoying that run, come back in and sitting down to your porridge and then just relaxing for the rest of the day is just what I enjoy most.
So we should really kind of bring the show to a close, bring the focus on marathon running to a close, and think a bit about kind of a summary, really. So I had a look at an article on Fast Running of the Day written by Dave Chalfin, which is really good. If you've got time, guys, go and check it out. I'll try and put a link to that on the show notes. And he was sort of saying, like, looking back in the 80s and 70s, some of the times we were running, people like Steve Jones, that sort of thing, at 2:07 at the marathon, and all these different things that have come out since, you know, these 4% shoes and these, you know, beetroot juice saves you 1% in recovery and all this sort of thing. And what have they really added up to, really? It's, you know, all these 1% improvements have only really added up to 1% improvement. It's a really good article. Go and check it out. And I guess what the summary was is we're now better at understanding what works for different people. But for the most part, there's no substitute for getting out there and getting the training done. And again, talking to both Mike and Elsie, one of the key principles to run good marathons, you've got to put mileage in. You've got to be able to put as much mileage in as you can tolerate. And what do you think? I mean, there's obviously no substitute, like you say, in the Boston course, thinking about specificity and doing some work at marathon pace and stuff. But increasingly mileage has always been important, and it will continue to be for the next, I guess, generation.
Yeah, like, I mean, to absolutely get what are we asking the body to do? We're asking the body to run like 26 miles and to do so like quickly, but ultimately, more importantly, economically. So, you know, high intensity training definitely has a role to play, but it doesn't, at least for me, you know, different coaches have different opinions, but for me, you can't substitute your day in, day out, good quality, you know, mileage, easy and steady state running that needs to be there first before you can. You might be able to build, you know, fitness and some speed quickly doing your interval work, but you need to plug that together for 26 miles. So without the good foundation, a really strong foundation of solid training, whether it's all running, whether it's a mix of running and other cross training, whatever it is, I think, you know, ultimately that's always going to be the bedrock of marathon running. I think David's article is absolutely brilliant for just reminding you that kind of, yeah, you can focus on all of these things, but if you haven't done the basics, and actually a lot of the basics haven't changed in the last 2, 3, 4 decades when, you know, British athletes were dominating the world, then frankly, you know, the marathon will probably catch you out at some point.
The disappointing thing is if you want to run a quick marathon this year, unfortunately, it takes ages. You know what I mean? Like, you need consistency for years to reach your potential in the marathon, which is... Yeah, for someone like me who flits about a bit too much, I think I think I'll give the marathon a miss from now on. But hey, but some of the other things we kind of, obviously speaking to Elsie and Mike, the other things I kind of picked up was getting some help is important. So getting a coach who knows what they're doing with marathon training. You spoke about Andy Hobdell being having loads of success at the moment with mainly with Irish athletes, strangely, but he's a great go-to coach and going to a physio, like Elsie mentioned, whenever she feels a niggle. It's, you can't really plunder it on your own. You need someone to give you advice, to tell you when you're overtraining, to tell you when things aren't going your way. So that was one thing I definitely picked up from the two interviews. And I guess the third thing I think is looking at kind of Ethiopian runners and talking obviously again to Jermaine, who's not a co-host anymore, but like the fact that Kenenisa Bekele, one of the best runners of our generation, one of the best marathon runners now in the world, you know, he sprints every day. He thinks about his mechanics as much as he does his ability to hold marathon pace. So I think that's kind of what I've kind of picked up in this little series. Any other tidbits for us, Tom? What's the key to marathon running success?
don't go off too hard. Yeah. There you go. It's all the boring. It's the boring stuff, isn't it? It's the being consistent. But the thing about getting support, I think, is really important. It flags up a sort of a bigger issue of it's a long and sometimes lonely road training for a marathon. And when you get to this point, as I say, training for London, you get to this point, you know, back end of February, you know what? You're not fit enough to run a marathon yet. So don't be trying to every single session you go out. If you go out and try and do every session, trying to prove your fitness to yourself, like, am I ready to run 2:30, 3 hours, 4 hours, whatever it is you're going for, you know, today's a test of that. You're going to eventually come unstuck, like mentally come unstuck. Your training is there to get you fit. You're not going to be ready till race day. And that's where other people to bounce ideas off, whether it's a coach, mentor, whether it's a training group, can really help. Because at some point in that training cycle, it's normal to go, oh, somebody else is doing something that's kind of interesting. And you flip between different training approaches. You kind of need to commit and you kind of need to stay consistent. And you might need to accept that it might be 2-3 marathon cycles before you really start to click. So learn from the mistakes, kind of change them next time round, or change them as you go, and you'll have a good day, provided you don't pace like an idiot.
Yeah, I would say from my experience the last couple of years, I am someone who can get into shape really quite quickly. And that point you made about February, we're at February now, the race is, I don't know, April, May, whenever your marathon is. You don't need to be fit now. Don't go chasing times and chasing splits now. It's later down the line we need to do that. And I certainly seem to peak too early. You know, I'm a bit long in the tooth. I've been doing it loads of years, but I still keep making mistakes. So having someone to keep warning you about those mistakes, but also to realise that you're in for the long run, you have got time to get yourself in key shape is important. So Yeah, lovely.
Well, right, Paul Pollock, didn't Paul Pollock say he broke his foot a few weeks before, like 8 weeks or something before, had a stress fracture about 8 weeks before before Valencia Marathon, and then broke the Northern Irish Marathon record. So, you know, you're not ready until marathon day. So stay positive.
Yeah, cracking stuff. Well, nice one, Tom. We're leaving you for a month. We've got Robbie back next month for our new focus, which is it's to be confirmed, but it's going to be in injury prevention unless anything else changes in the next day or two. So we're going to talk about preventing picking up injuries and strategies for that. And we'll have some good experts on there to talk you through those things. So, yeah, looking forward to it, and have a good month, Tom. Hopefully work will calm down a bit, and we'll see. We'll hear more from you in a month's time.
Looking forward to it. Have a great month. Speak to you soon.
Nice one. Cheers, man. Bye.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.